Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. What if the most powerful thing a leader can do for the people around them is actually say less? My guest today has spent over a decade helping executives, business owners, and leadership teams build the kind of loyalty that doesn't show up on a balance sheet, but drives everything that does. Tim Dumas is an executive strategic coach, a Maxwell leadership trainer, a McKay CEO forum chair by day, and by night, a high school football coach in the Vancouver area. He believes that greatness is not something you achieve alone. It's something you bring out in others. And today we're talking about exactly how you do that through clearer communication, deeper trust, and the kind of relationships that make people want to show up and give their best. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Pleasure to be with you, Janice.
Thank you. You know, disclosure, I said your name wrong the first time I tried to introduce you, and that also made me think that I loved names, and instead of saying the S on the end of your name, it is silent. So now I'm curious, is that French?
It is French, yes.
Ah, okay. French Canadian or French French?
No, French from France.
All right. So did that haunt you during school?
It did at times, yes, yes. And then, you know, I don't get too worried about those kind of things.
Okay, fair enough.
So yeah, there's probably people that have known me for decades that don't quite pronounce it right, but in the end, I don't get too excited, worried about that.
Okay, I think when I first spoke with you, I want to just clarify something I forgot to ask you before we went online. We met through an introduction from a lovely gentleman that I interviewed called Coach Jim Johnson, correct? Mm-hmm. How do you know Coach Jim? Or did you? Maybe you didn't.
Well, it was more than 5 years ago. I want to say probably 7 years ago. It was 2 weeks before Christmas. I'll never forget. And I'm in my office and I get a phone call from Rochester, New York. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if I know a lot of people there. And it's on the other line. It's, hey, Tim, this is Coach Jim Johnson. And I had got to know his story. And I just reached out to him on his website. I said, hey, your story's really cool. We should connect sometime. So it's literally days later, Coach Jim connected. And since then, we've become great friends. We talk every few months. And he's one of the best connectors, also one of the, you know, a great leader and a great leadership story. One of the great leaders that I know.
So true, because he was introduced to me by another gentleman from New York who had been on my podcast, who was introduced to me by someone and so on. And he was so delightful. I didn't know his story until I was introduced to him. But when I did, it was instant bonding because my husband coached basketball forever, right? So we had a lot of fun. And he was a guest on my podcast a couple of months ago. And since then, he comments on everything I post. He sends me articles. He's very good at connecting. You're absolutely right. And keeping nurturing relationships. So anyone who knows Coach Jim knows that that's what it's all about, relationships. Right?
Well, he's one of the best connectors that there is. And as you talk about relationships, isn't it interesting where we are in society, where you and I live less than an hour apart by car?
Yes.
And Coach Jim introduces us from the other side of the continent.
I know, and I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. Honestly, it's amazing. But nevertheless, it's wonderful. And I love meeting new people, and especially people that I have connections with. So it's great. All right, Tim. So the famous, I don't know if I shared this with you, but the famous movie line about from the movie that probably is way before your time called Looking for Mr. Goodbar. With right. Diane Keaton, Teresa by day, Terry by night. That's what it made me think of when I saw your LinkedIn profile. Executive strategic coach by day, football coach by night. I love it. So you coach executives in the daytime and you're a football coach, high school football coach by night. Most people would see those as two very different worlds. So what do you see when you look at both of them together?
I think they're, quite similar worlds, actually. In each of those instances, in the boardroom by day and on the football field by night, we're leading and we're carrying out leadership. And when I first got into leadership, soon after university, I got a leadership role in the company, and I wandered into my first meeting with the group of people I was leading. And I was ready to wow them with this amazing fire and brimstone speech, just like an old football coach might. And you know what? The speech I prepared wasn't that bad. It was pretty good, actually. But they looked back at me and they said, "Why should I follow you?" And what I realized at that time was, even though I kind of knew what leadership was loosely, I actually didn't know what it was or really how to define it. And so I went on a decade and a half journey trying to find out what the definition of leadership actually was. You have John Maxwell that talks about it being influence, but I really thought there was something more. You have Brené Brown that talks about it, so the power of vulnerability, and you have many other people carrying out all kinds of different leadership journeys in between. But it wasn't until I met this guy about 15 years in named Alex Havard, who wrote a book called The Power of Magnanimity, and he said, "Tim, the definition of leadership is magnanimity." And I hate to tell you, I had no idea what that meant.
Is this the guy from England?
He's actually, he's from France. He's a Russian guy that
Okay.
spent half his life in France, Russia, and Finland.
Oh, okay.
So his half is one of his parents is Russian, one of his parents is French. So he wrote this book called The Power of
That
Magnanimity.
word, yes. It's hard to
Yeah.
say it, never mind know what it means, right?
I've only just learned to say it recently. And so he defines magnanimity as what I think is the greatest line of leadership, and the definition of leadership is the spirit of striving for greatness by bringing out the greatness in others. The spirit of striving for greatness by bringing out the greatness in others. And if you go back to that question you had about the football coach by night, in boardrooms by day, isn't that what we're trying to do in both areas? Striving for greatness ourselves, because if we don't strive for greatness ourselves, it's pretty hard to bring out the greatness in others. Now, that doesn't mean we have to be great ourselves. Doesn't mean that. It means we're striving for it, because that's always something that we can continue to strive for and get better and better at. And so, the reason why I see they're similar is we're really trying to, work on ourselves so that we can bring out the greatness in others. With my high school football young men, the greatest thing you can ever say to me is that, "Hey, coach, I became a better human being because of my time with you." And certainly in the boardroom, hopefully these companies, have greater profitability, greater success as a company. But in the end, hopefully each of those people are just a slightly better person as a result of us being together. And that's why I see them as totally synergistic. We're really doing the same thing in a slightly different mean.
I would imagine, I don't know if I'm sure you use analogies in the boardroom from your football career, but I just want to go back one more step a little bit. I guess I heard you talk about this on a podcast, and it was about the beginning of your path, whether what it was going to be and what it ended up not being, based on your time when did you go to school here in Vancouver?
I spent time at Simon Fraser in Vancouver playing football and going to school. And I also spent time at Mercyhurst College in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Right, but you didn't go to high school here?
I went to high school in
Oh,
Vancouver.
you
I graduated
did.
from Vancouver. Yeah.
Where did you go?
At St. Thomas More.
Got it. A good football school, big football school, and basketball, but more football, I think, right? So, I understand there's a story about when you were at Mercyville that changed the course of where you were going. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, so I was in my freshman year, straight out of high school, and it's the first few weeks of practice. We still haven't had our first game, and I'm walking off the field with our head coach, and he's one of the greatest men I ever met. His name's Joe Kimball. I have a great deal of respect for him, to this day. We're walking off the field, and at that time he had two little kids, two little boys, aged about 6 and 8. As we're walking off the field, they come give him a big hug. And then they ran off as he was going into a meeting with me. And as we're walking into the team meeting, he turns to me and said, "Tim, I love coaching college football." And he goes, "I love influencing young men. But," he goes, "it comes at a price." He said, "I leave home every day during the season before my kids wake up. And I come home every night after my kids go to bed. And until that moment, I always thought I'd take this football career thing as far as I could. If I could play some kind of professional, I'll do it. If I can, I'll get into coaching and we'll see what happens. At that moment, I realized, you know what? I don't know if that's a sacrifice that I'm willing to make. And my dream, if you will, died at that time. I was an assistant coach in college for a couple years after I played, but I knew I was going to go on to work in other areas after that. And really, for the better part of a decade, decade and a half, that dream died. I bandied around coaching a little high school football, some minor football, but it wasn't until I met an executive coach who I work with to this day, named Dean Ritchie, and he came in and he showed me what coaching was. I didn't even know coaching was a thing, right? Until I met him. And then I realized there's actually this coaching thing that we can coach people both in the boardroom and both in their personal lives. And I realized that even though there was a decade, decade and a half in between from where my dream died and where my dream reignited, that's the day it reignited. And I realized that my call was actually to coaching in the boardroom and life and everything, not just on the football field.
But when I heard that story about you, it reminded me of a gentleman that I interviewed way back. And his name is David Neuer. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's out of he I think he teaches in the MBA program at Emory University in Georgia, but he's not originally from the States. But anyway, and he's written a series of books, but this one particular book, it's called Curve Benders, and he's all about the psychology of relationships and so on. And I'm looking at my other screen because I had to put it over there to remind me. So he talks about, I'm going to read it to you. He highlights how certain relationships enable a non-linear growth trajectory beyond what we can accomplish. They often shape who we become. And he calls those relationships curve benders. And he describes in his book who they are, where they are, how to find and engage with them. But it made me think of my husband originally, and now it makes me think of you in a different way. My husband was a curve bender to so many of his students because they were influenced by him in high school, and still to this day, they say things like he was a coach first and foremost, but he was also a teacher, and he taught accounting. And people will stop him now and say, "You know, I wouldn't be an accountant if it wasn't for you," you know, and that kind of thing. So they influenced. And in your case, that coach influenced you early on and stayed, you know, really strong in your life. And then this coach that you just mentioned that's still in your life now. So see how special people like coaches can be over the in somebody's life. It's amazing. And I think you're lucky when you have that. I don't know who my curve benders were if I had any, you know? But certainly in your line of work, day and night, you can be that influence on people, which is amazing.
Yeah, as you talk about curve benders, it reminds me too of one of the most impactful coaching. You can do this in a retreat or even in a session that I've seen is there's a great coaching retreat called the 5-5-5. The 5-5-5 asks you to think about who are the most five most impactful people in your life, what are the five most impactful decisions you've made in your life, and what are the five most impactful events of your life. And
But you
if
have
you
six
were
kids.
We have six kids.
Any
So
twins?
for us, there's no
No
twins, no.
twins. Okay, you're in
So for
trouble.
us,
Okay.
there'd be
Yeah.
six. But when you really, if you take the time to really think about that, and really, it's really, there's a lot of self understanding and awareness that comes of that. You're like, wow. And some of the decisions that are your top five might not necessarily be a positive decision, might end up being positive in the long term, but you might have made a negative decision together. The events might have been negative in the moment, and hopefully we've grown from that then. And even the people, I've heard some people say, well, you know what? I have four out of five were really positive influences. One wasn't, but it also shaped who I am today. So as you talk about this, it reminds me of some of these reflections that help us understand where we can go in the future, through coaching.
Awesome. So I know this isn't where I started was going to go, but I had to. So it's what comes to me. But okay, your work centers on loyalty, specifically on earning it rather than expecting it. So in your experience, what is the most common mistake leaders make when it comes to building loyalty with the people around them?
Well, I think number one, it's just understanding what it is. Similar to understanding what leadership is, when I go into boardrooms and we ask, hey, what's the definition of leadership? It's all over the map what we get, right? And some people really haven't thought about that. It's the same with loyalty. One of the best definitions of loyalty I've seen as it relates to customers is Ken Blanchard's book, Raving Fans. And he defines customer loyalty as someone that will scream from the mountaintops, telling other people to do business with you for no other reason that they want you to receive the same joy that they receive by doing business with you. You should drive by five other businesses that do the same thing just to go to this business. And so you can paraphrase that to be loyalty in life, loyalty with your employees, loyalty with anyone. People will scream from the mountaintops that they should know you. We talked about Coach Jim Johnson that does that, for you and I and for many other people. But most people don't really understand what that takes to get there. If you think for a moment, you think, hey, how many businesses am I truly a raving fan of? They'll scream from the mountaintop saying, you must drive across town, across the city, across the country to go to this place because I want you to receive the same sheer joy. If you think about it, it's very few. It's usually somewhere from 1 to 3% of all the businesses we do business with. And it's not too different for people, right? So when we truly understand, hey, it's a high bar for us to achieve that loyalty. And so if it's such a high bar, I better prepare to get to that high bar, to achieve that for my in my relationships, in my family, with my employees, and my coworkers and my clients.
Okay, let's talk now about the concept of executive brevity. I know that that's why I asked you if that was someone from England, because I understand this is where this came from for you, this learning about executive brevity. Tell me the story and tell my listeners the story, and what does it actually mean in practice?
So, one of the things I've been lucky enough to do and how I met you is I always look to surround myself with game changers. Who's a game changer in my life in all areas? And multiple times a month, I try to meet new game changers. And about probably 5 years ago, a gentleman named Ian Price came into my life from he lives in the UK. And since that day, Ian and I talk every couple months. And I learn a ton from him. I would consider him a mentor and coach of mine. And one day, he asked me a question, and I babbled on with some answer, and probably spent too much time answering the question. He said, "Tim, you have no idea what you're talking about, do you?" And I said, "What are you talking about, Ian?" He said, "Well, I know that your answer to the question is inversely related to the number of words you used to answer it with." So he said, if you truly know what you're talking about, you can boom, rattle it off just like that. He goes, look, on leadership, he goes, you'll rattle off and strive for greatness by bringing out the greatness in others. You'll rattle off in those few words. And he said, if you really think about when you go into a boardroom, and this is something I've learned as well from another coach who's based in Vancouver named Dean Ritchie. He says this all the time. When you go into a boardroom, the whole key to great leadership is saying the most in the least amount of time. There's a great quote by Churchill, and somebody asked him to do a speech. And they said, well, Churchill, when will you be ready to do the speech? He said, well, it depends. He goes, if it's a 3 hour speech, I'm ready today. If it's a 1 hour speech, it'll take me a week. And if it's a 15 minute speech, it'll take me a month to prepare. And what he was saying is, if I'm gonna have executive brevity, he goes, I'm going to have to figure out, I got to be really intentional with the words that I say and use. So I better hone in. If I have 15 minutes, I only have a few hundred words. I better hone in exactly what I need to say.
That's a great way to explain it. I love it. And I think that probably also goes along with the pregnant pause and giving the audience if you're giving a speech in that sense, a chance to digest what you've said, and either if it's question and answer or whatever, or if it's just moving to the next piece because you want that space in between. That's so true. I think when I think about if someone, even like in networking, when someone comes to an event or even on Zoom and they say, "So what do you do?" And they realize, I mean, they know they only have 10 minutes and there's four people in the room and they never stop talking, right? So there's so much hidden in that whole thing. Like, I'm nervous, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm gonna keep talking and whatever, compared to the person who maybe doesn't even mention what they do in terms of themselves, but rather in a question or something to the other people, and then they don't say anything else.
You know, what's really interesting is this doesn't get taught in traditional sales, but if you're going to a sales training course, the best sales training that I've ever seen is about how to ask the right questions to have that person sell that thing to themselves, right? And so often people come into sales are like, this is the greatest item, you should buy it, it's a great widget, it does all these things, but nobody's gonna buy something because I told them to. But if I ask questions to help them understand why that might be of value to them, that's actually the greatest sales technique. Just asking questions and listening.
And oh shoot, what was I going to say? Gone. It's okay. I'm coming to it's talk about it anyway. Most leaders I know, no, I'm not going to say it that way because that's not true. I know that there are people who fill silence with words because they're, for whatever reason, they overexplain, they overjustify, and they overpresent, which is what we just talked about. What can that cost somebody relationally with the people that they lead? And also, I put a note here because I heard you talk about one of the great business leaders in that respect, and that's Jim Collins from his book Good to Great. And I want to mention something about that after you've answered.
Sure. Well, often we miss things or lose things because we're not listening. And it's a lost art. And when you start doing coaching's, about asking questions. Coaching's 80% of the coachee doing the talking. So they can help come to that realization themselves. The other thing it is especially for me, I typically like to run fast. And I don't mean running, I mean like in daily life, I like to go fast. But if we really want to think through something, we need to slow down. And so it's not natural to me to pause. It doesn't come naturally. When I hear it's like almost like nails on the chalkboard. I want to chime in, I want to say something. But also, I know that's actually where the magic can happen. And if you look at extended pauses, another great friend and mentor of mine, Nico Human, who's a guy who lives in Greater Vancouver, he's an executive coach as well. He said to me, "Tim, the best 2 hours of my week are when I waste time." And I said, "That's interesting. No, nobody talks about wasting time." He goes, "No, Tim." He goes, "I go to this park bench close to my house for every 2 hours. I turn my phone off. I bring a notepad. I sit there and I stare at the park." And he goes, "I just think. And it takes me about half an hour to actually start thinking. And then in the middle hour, I can think. And by the last half hour, I'm struggling to think again." But he goes, "It's the best time because I'm in silence and I understand how actually to think." It's the same thing when we're in a conversation. We always want to chime in and think about what are we saying next. The last piece of this is, everybody's different. And when we study, personality profiles like the DISC profile, you realize that there are some people that need to take longer to process than others. And that's neither right nor wrong. The reason why they're doing it is usually they're more detail oriented and they want to really come up with a good answer. Whereas people that are less detail oriented, we'll just start talking and then we'll figure it out as we go. So people like that, when we realize the power of silence and the power of listening and the power of thinking, that's where the magic really happens.
You know what the anagram of listen is?
Tell me.
Silent.
Yeah.
It's like, how easy is that? And nobody ever knows. And I read a book once about listening, and that's where I learned it. But it's just, oh my God. There it is, right there. Yeah, it's magic. Okay. So you chair the, it's McKay or Mackay? It's McKay.
McKay.
Yeah, I was right. Okay. You chair the McKay, you are a chair of McKay's CEO Forum Group.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to you offline when we first spoke that I just had sort of a taste of what that is. But peer learning circles where senior leaders come together to work through their toughest challenges. I think that's an adequate definition. What happens in those rooms that doesn't happen anywhere else in a leader's life?
Well, when you get to the role of like a senior leader or CEO of a company,
Yeah.
there's fewer people in the company that you can actually go
Sure.
to talk about some of those difficult challenges. There's the mantra, it's lonely at the top. And ironically, Nancy McKay, the founder of McKay CEO Forums, wrote a book just
Oh,
on that
okay.
very topic. Now, when you come to a peer group forum like that, and there's multiple types of them, but like McKay CEO Forums, it's really like a personal advisory board for you personally as a CEO and for you as a human being. And there's not really that many places in the world that you can go to get that kind of peer shared experience from people who are dealing with some of the same things in other industries. And so that's why there's such a great value in peer learning. That's why there's such a great value in something like McKay CEO Forum. See, in adult learning or peer learning, we learn by sharing our experiences with others, as opposed to when we're kids in a school, we're taught by people telling us how to do math, how to do how to speak the language, etc. But as we grow as adults, and this is something I've learned when I'm doing speaking or workshops. When I first started doing keynote speaking and workshops, it was often a lot of me that did the talking. The more I learn that it's got to be almost a majority of the people doing the talking in the audience. So we're always doing breakout sessions so they can learn, discuss, chat, because that's really where the learning comes when we process it ourselves, and talk it out together.
So I would think, as somebody new coming to those meetings, those events, I guess you call them sessions, do you notice a difference in people being vulnerable enough to share when they first come versus those who are more experienced at it?
Typically, yes, but it depends. I think once you get into the room and you see the other people sharing that vulnerability, and that's really, Brené Brown's made that term famous, the power of vulnerability, right? But when we see others share with that vulnerability, we realize that even if I run a company with a dozen employees, or even with three employees, the person who runs a company with 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 employees, they put their pants on the same way you and I do every day, one leg at a time. And the first time I ever went to a McKay Forum group, I realized that when I saw this person who ran a massive company. And they came to, with it, put an issue on the table at the meeting. And I was like, oh man, that's a similar issue to what I have. And so, when you go through it, you realize that, hey, sure, there's some differences based on our size of company, but when you really boil it down, leadership of any type is similar. We can learn from anyone. I was once introduced to somebody by a great connector, and you and I are introduced by a great connector in Jim Johnson. But this great connector introduced me, or initially, this was about 15 years ago. Initially, I said to this person, I said, "Hey, why would you connect me with this person? I don't think we have anything in common. Is there anything I can learn from them?" This person shook their head at me and said, "Tim," he goes, "if you're willing to look, you'll find something." So I had to go have a meeting with this person. This person turned out to be one of the greatest connectors I've met, a great leader, someone who I seemingly didn't have a lot in common with, but I went there to seek it out and I found it. So now, just like you and I connected, Anytime I connect with someone, it's extremely rare, if never, where I can't find some way that that person will add value to me, and hopefully vice versa.
Yeah, and that's such a good point because I was introduced to somebody a couple of days ago saying this person referred this person to me because they needed some questions answered, they were stuck on something on LinkedIn. And I said, of course, anyway, I talked to this person this morning and I didn't really know where it was going to go or I could see you were talking about the DISC personalities earlier, and like this person spoke, it was a woman, and she spoke much slower than I did, and she was a different thinker, different way of it could just tell. So I tried to, mirror how she was and warm her up by some things that I said. And the whole point is, I mean, she thought, or the person who introduced us thought that there was a possibility of some work for me there, right? But I don't want to jump in on that. So I mean, it's important how you make those first conversations. You always want to give value, right? So, and you always want to be open and curious enough to learn about them. So let them talk, ask them questions.
Yeah, and you brought up doing business together, and typically in a first time meeting someone, we typically wouldn't talk about doing business together
No.
because we need to build a relationship first.
Exactly.
And so
Yeah.
we do business with people, we hang out with people that we have a relationship with. And so, if we really come at it from a place of adding value to others and from building a relationship, good things will happen.
Exactly.
As opposed to that hard pressure sales close. I'm not really interested in that. And the majority of people I meet, I'll probably never do business with. However, they might know someone that I might do business with. They might introduce me to someone. I just know that my life's better off when I meet more good people.
Exactly. It's so true. And I love people that say things like that. It's magic. So when you bring out the greatness in somebody that you're coaching, what does it look like when a leader finally stops getting in the way of the people around them and starts truly leading through relationship?
I think it's a lot of what we've already talked about. It's a lot about listening. It's a lot about trust and building that trust. Like making sure that people around them know that I got your back, and that really, failing is only a step towards success. If I really had to put it maybe in 7 words, I'd probably put it this. There's a great acronym, which is LEADING, LEADING. And if we talk about what does that really look like when someone really shows up to lead, it's this: L, love unconditionally. And although love is, Steve Farber talked about love is just damn good business in the workplace, we still get sent to HR if we say I love you. Now, I want to make sure we know what that means. Love means I care about you like a brother or sister or a cousin or a friend, right? But the Harvard Business Review also did a study saying people feel more loved when they feel more loved and cared for at work. They do better work. Shocking. No one's ever said, I can't believe that. Yet in the workplace, we're worried about love. Number one, love unconditionally. L, E with positive energy. And positive energy doesn't mean we're necessarily bouncing off the walls. But we all know that person when they come in the room, that the room lights up just because they walk in there. So E, positive energy. A was steadfast accountability. And maybe we'll get back to a little more about accountability at the end. But great leader holds people accountable. If I truly care about you, I'll help hold you accountable to achieve the things that you want to achieve. And I would have some difficult conversations with you. Number four, the D is dream audaciously. I'll support you to achieve your biggest dreams, and nothing will be too big. If you say I want to, become the president or the prime minister, then I got your back to help you get there. But we're going to have to do some hard things to get there. The I in leading is actually a one for the 100-0 principle. When I show up as a great leader, I take 100% responsibility. I make 0% excuses. Jim Collins calls this the mirror principle. If something goes wrong, I look in the mirror. I don't look out the window looking for people to blame. I'm always working on what's the 1% I can work on, and that even if the other person needs to work on the other 99. The N is for neutral thinking. Neutral thinking is not positive thinking, is not negative thinking. It's being neutral. And the best way to describe that is through the Apollo 13 mission. The Apollo 13 mission, they go up in the sky, they're around the moon, and they lose all power, their engines don't work, and they can't get back. If they negatively thought, they would say, "We're all gonna die," which was probably likely. If they positively thought, they'd say, "Don't worry, we have the smartest people back at NASA that'll get us home." But they didn't do either of those things. They neutrally thought. They said they confronted the brutal fact of where they are today with unwavering faith they'll get home in the end, and they did what they needed to do day after day to get home. And they, worked through that. Another way to describe that is Jim Collins called it the Stockdale paradox, right? Three things of neutral thinking in the Stockdale paradox: confront the brutal fact of where we are today with unwavering faith we'll succeed in the end, and then do what we need to do to get there. And then the last, the G of leading, and how people show up as great leaders in their organization is actually a six. It's I got your six. I got your back. If you think about the greatest leaders you've been around, you've always known that they got your back. If you screw up, they got your back saying, "Hey, how are we going to overcome this? How are we going to learn from this?" Right? There's never a problem with failing. The problem is if we fail at the same thing over and over again, we don't learn from it. So what are we going to do to get past it? So in the end, those leaders, once we do coaching, those leaders, how they show up is through that acronym of leading.
That's good. I'll be writing that down when I get the transcript. That's really good. You didn't mention it in, I think it's when I heard you on a podcast. You were talking about how, and I just, this is just a FYI thing. When you were talking about Jim Collins' book, and you were saying that he's not he's a kind of a quiet guy, kind of not out there. And I just saw that he's doing an interview, or he's just done an interview with Oprah about his newest book. You might want to
Yeah.
listen to it. I
What
don't
to
know.
make of a life?
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So it sounds to me like I got two more questions. It sounds to me that you are a voracious reader. So what are you reading right now?
We're not reading. You know what? I'm rereading Jim Collins' BE 2.0,
Oh, that's so
Beyond
funny.
Entrepreneurship 2.0.
Okay.
I just read his book, What to Make of a Life, his brand
Okay.
new book that's
Yeah.
been out for a couple months. And it kind of got me on that train again to really think about that, because in the businesses that we work with, his time and tried and true tested principles come back over and over again. So my last one was his one, and that got me back on his hit one of his older ones.
Oh, so that's fantastic that we talked about that. All right. Loyalty, brevity, and courage, all things that take practice. And for a leader who might be listening or watching now and recognizing a gap in how they are showing up for their teams, where do they start? And in that, how do they find you?
Well, how do they find me? So you can easily find me. You can at my website, serviceleadership.com. Service is spelled SERVUS, which is
S,
the
yeah.
Latin word for servant leadership. You can email me through there. You can also find my direct cell number through there, so you can certainly call me. I also do a ton of work with Lawrence and Company. So if you go to lawrenceandco.com, Lawrence and spelled and co.com, you'll find me there. And in Lawrence and Co, that's where we do strategic planning for companies across North America and the world, and a lot of that executive coaching. So the best way to find me is through there, or reach out to you, Janice, and you'll find me.
Perfect. Thank you. This has been a pleasure. I'd love to hear you giving your speech to your football team before a game or at the end of a game, because that's where it's all there, right? Season is what? In the fall in our part of the world, right?
Yes.
How did you do last season?
Last season we lost in the provincial
Oh.
semifinal. Went
Oh,
to the
but
championship game 2 years ago and the semifinal last year.
fantastic. You
Yeah,
got a good program there.
missed on the big one.
Yeah, well, that sounds like my husband's team. Yeah, but does that bring you back for the next time?
Yes. And in the end, look, we all want to win, and that's really important. But in the grand scheme of things, the goal is, as we talked about at the beginning, is have we made people around us better? Are those young men that we coached going to be better husbands and fathers, community members, in the next stage of their life? And if we can say a little bit yes, then what we did was worth it.
Exactly. Are you coaching any of your kids yet?
Yeah, I do. I have my third son graduates this year, so I coached him and I coached his older brother in the last 2 years. He's now at university, and then now I have three younger kids coming up. I'm still
Playing
coaching.
football? Is your older one playing football?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Tim, and your wisdom. And I love that part better that we have as we get older. It's great to be able to share that wisdom with other people. So I encourage my audience to reach out to Tim, see about his work. Are you on LinkedIn a lot? Should they be?
I'm on LinkedIn. You can
Yep.
also find me easily on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And thank you again. And remember that I believe it's all about relationships. And so it's important that whatever work you do, that you realize that in the end, we can't do it without people around us, I don't think. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you again. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.